This is the Ministry of Truth. I'm Gordon Comstock. Time for Chapter 5 of the online book, The United States is Still a British Colony, by James Montgomery. Chapter 5 is called Common Law versus Conquest. And again, if you're a constitutionalist, look out. Your belief system is about to be shattered. The forefathers that represented the states, lowercase s, or the colonies, at the beginning of this country acted primarily for their own interest. This is brought out by Lysander Spooner in his paper on the Constitution of No Authority. They represented the states, lowercase s, formerly the colonies, which were created by the King of England, by his charters, and his established Sestui Quay Trust. The 1783 peace treaty ceded the land above ground to the states, lowercase s, while reserving, through Article 6 of the 1783 treaty, the King's corporation and the corporations of his British subjects. As I have said before, if you will look at other charters, you will see the King is very specific when he gives land by grant or charter to his subjects. If the King had meant to give the minerals to the states, he would have said so very clearly in the 1783 peace treaty. The 1783 peace treaty is void of any such grant. The King did not relinquish his claim for his heirs and successors, nor could he. His tax was to continue forever. For his expenditure in starting America Incorporated. This condition does tie together with what happened post-Civil War. The King's interest continued to be observed and a tax collected. In a few of the below quotes, you will see Lysander Spooner will answer a synopsis on how the common law is supposed to work. But at the same time, his arguments are flawed. Not that he is wrong, but he fails to take into account charters, treaties, and conquest. To show a comparison between Lysander Spooner's view on how the law is supposed to work, I am including, after his quotes, quotes from the Attorney General during the time of the Reconstruction Acts when they were issued. The Attorney General defines the Reconstruction Acts, giving his complete read to their meaning. You will be astounded at his candor and blatant disregard for the 1787 Constitution and Anglo-Saxon common law, so ably expounded upon by the quotes of Lysander Spooner. The following quote is from Lysander Spooner. The Constitution of No Authority. It was written in 1869. Quote, "The Constitution has no inherent authority or obligation. It has no authority or obligation at all, unless as a contract between man and man, and it does not so much as even purport to be a contract between persons now existing. It purports, at most, to be only a contract between persons living 80 years ago. And it can be supposed to have been a contract then only between persons who had already come to years of discretion, so as to be competent to make reasonable and obligatory contracts. Furthermore, we know, historically, that only a small portion, even of the people then existing, were consulted on the subject, or asked, or permitted to express, either their consent or dissent in any formal manner. Those persons, if any, who did give their consent formally, are all dead now. Most of them have been dead 40, 50, 60, or 70 years. And the Constitution, so far as it was their contract, died with them. They had no natural power or right to make it obligatory upon their children. It is not only plainly impossible, in the nature of things, that they could bind their posterity, but they did not even attempt to bind them. That is to say, the instrument does not purport to be an agreement between any body but, quote-unquote, the people then existing. Nor does it, either expressly or impliedly, assert any right, power, or disposition on their part to bind anybody but themselves. Let us see. Its language is, no treason, unquote. That again from the Constitution of No Authority, written in 1869 by Lysander Spooner. Here again is another quote from Lysander Spooner. Quote, the Constitution not only binds nobody now, but it never did bind anybody. It never bound anybody because it was never agreed to by anybody in such a manner as to make it, on general principles of law and reason, binding upon him. It is a general principle of law and reason that a written instrument binds no one until he has signed it. Parentheses here from James Montgomery. The informer asked me to inject here that in Title 12, it is your signature that binds you to the debt, and or the lack of a signature that makes you an involuntary contributor. End parentheses, back to the words of Lysander Spooner. This principle is so inflexible a one that even though a man is unable to write his name, he still must, quote-unquote, make his mark before he is bound by a written contract. This custom was established ages ago, when few men could write their names, when a clerk, that is, a man who could write, was so rare and valuable a person that even if he were guilty of high crimes, he was entitled to pardon on the ground that the public could not afford to lose his services. Even at that time, a written contract must be signed, and men who could not write, either make their mark or signed their contracts by stamping their seals upon wax affixed to the parchment on which their contracts were written. Hence the custom of affixing seals that has continued to this time. Unquote, Lysander Spooner. Another quote from Lysander Spooner. Quote, the very men who drafted it, the Constitution, never signed it in any way to bind themselves by it as a contract. And not one of them probably ever would have signed it in any way to bind himself by it as a contract, unquote. Another quote from Lysander Spooner. And yet we have what purports or professes or is claimed to be a contract, the Constitution, made 80 years ago by men who are all now dead, and who never had any power to bind us, but which, it is claimed, has nevertheless bound 3 generations of men, consisting of many millions, and which, it is claimed, will be binding upon all the millions that are to come, but which nobody ever signed, sealed, delivered, witnessed, or acknowledged, and which few persons, compared with the whole number that are claimed to be bound by it, have ever read, or even seen, or ever will read or see. And of those who ever have read it, or ever will read it, scarcely any two, perhaps no two, have ever agreed, or ever will agree as to what it means, unquote. That's because of the legalese that the lovely, deceptive, founding, quote-unquote, fathers put in there. Next quote from Lysander Spooner, quote, "If, then, those who established the Constitution had no power to bind, and did not attempt to bind, their posterity, the question arises whether their posterity have bound themselves. If they have done so, they can have done so in only one or both of these two ways, vis-à-vis voting and or paying taxes," unquote. Another quote from Lysander Spooner. "It cannot be said that by voting, a man pledges himself to support the Constitution, unless the act of voting be a perfectly voluntary one on his part. Yet the act of voting cannot properly be called a voluntary one on the part of any very large number of those who do vote. It is rather a measure of necessity imposed upon them by others than one of their own choice. On this point, I repeat what was said in a former number, vis-à-vis, in truth, in the case of individuals, their actual voting is not to be taken as proof of consent, even for the time being. On the contrary, it is to be considered that, without his consent having even been asked, a man finds himself environed by a government that he cannot resist, a government that forces him to pay money, render service, and forego the exercise of many of his natural rights under peril of weighty punishments. He sees, too, that other men practice this tyranny over him by the use of the ballot. He sees further that, if he will but use the ballot himself, he has some chance of relieving himself from this tyranny of others by subjecting them to his own. In short, he finds himself, without his consent, so situated that, if he use the ballot, he may become a master. If he does not use it, he must become a slave. And he has no other alternative than these two. In self-defense, he attempts the former. His case is analogous to that of a man who has been forced into battle, where he must either kill others or be killed himself, because, to save his own life in battle, a man takes the lives of his opponents. It is not to be inferred that the battle is one of his own choosing, neither in contests with the ballot, which is a mere substitute for a bullet, because, as his only chance of self-preservation, a man uses a ballot. Is it to be inferred that the contest is one into which he voluntarily entered, that he voluntarily set up all his own natural rights as a stake against those of others to be lost or won by the mere power of numbers? On the contrary, it is to be considered that, in an exigency into which he had been forced by others, and in which no other means of self-defense offered, he, as a matter of necessity, used the only one that was left to him." Unquote. Back to the words of James Montgomery. Again, in the perfect world, not ruled or controlled by conquest, military necessity, or public policy, and assuming you had honorable judges and informed juries, you may be relieved of liability for voting. However, since the end of the Civil War, the conqueror has used voting, or your mere presence in the state for proof of residence, as your tacit admission and agreement for whatever action Congress takes, whereby they levy a tax. The following quote is very true. I have been warning this is the condition of our country, and that the government controls this country contrary to the 1787 U.S. Constitution, at least since March 4, 1791, and for sure since March 2, 1867, when an act of Congress destroyed the 1787 Constitution. This quote is from, again, Lysander Spooner. Quote, go to blank blank and say to him that, quote unquote, the government has need of money to meet the expenses of protecting him and his property. If he presumes to say that he has never contracted with us to protect him, and that he wants none of our protection, say to him that this is our business, and not his. That we choose to protect him, whether he desires us to or not. And that we demand pay, too, for protecting him. If he dares to inquire who the individuals are, who have thus taken upon themselves the title of, quote-unquote, the government, and to assume to protect him and demand payment of him, without his ever having made any contract with them, say to him that that too is our business, and not his. That we do not choose to make ourselves individually known to him. That we have secretly, by secret ballot, appointed you our agent to give him notice of our demands. And if he complies with them, to give him, in our name, a receipt that will protect him against any similar demand for the present year. If he refuses to comply, seize and sell enough of his property to pay not only our demands, but all of your own expenses and trouble beside. If he resists the seizure of his property, call upon the bystanders to help you. Doubtless some of them will prove to be members of our band. If in defending his property he should kill any of our band who are assisting you, capture him at all hazards. Charge him in one of our courts with murder. Convict him and hang him. If he should call upon his neighbors or any others who, like him, may be disposed to resist our demands, and they should come in large numbers to his assistance, cry out that they are all rebels and traitors, that, quote-unquote, our country is in danger. Call upon the commander of our hired murderers. Tell him to quell the rebellion and, quote-unquote, save the country, cost what it may. Tell him to kill all who resist, though they should be hundreds of thousands, and thus strike terror into all others similarly disposed. See that the work of murder is thoroughly done, that we may have no further trouble of this kind hereafter. When these traitors shall have been thus taught our strength and our determination, they will be good, loyal citizens for many years, and pay their taxes without a why or a wherefore, unquote, Lysander Spooner. And James Montgomery writes, in conjunction with that, remember Waco. Spooner's below statement is true, except for the reality of conquest. This is Lysander Spooner again. Quote, these facts are all so vital and so self-evident that it cannot reasonably be supposed that anyone will voluntarily pay money to a government, quote-unquote, for the purpose of securing its protection unless he first make an explicit and purely voluntary contract with it for that purpose. It is perfectly evident, therefore, that neither such voting nor such payment of taxes as actually takes place proves anybody's consent or obligation to support the Constitution. Consequently, we have no evidence at all that the Constitution is binding upon anybody, and that anybody is under any contract or obligation whatever to support it, and nobody is under any obligation to support it. Unquote, Lysander Spooner. Back to James Montgomery. Remember in a previous post where you were shown the Judge Advocate General's authority over the districts was given to the Attorney General. Now you know why certain things have taken place in our government. I'll include it here for you. This is from Congressman Lawrence. Quote, if a question of martial law is to be determined by the law officers of government, it will now belong to the Attorney General or to this Department of Justice. It will not belong to the Judge Advocate General of the Army. He will not be called upon for any opinion relating to martial law or military law, except as to that portion of the administration of military law which relates to military justice. Unquote. Now Montgomery writes, the below quotes are from Attorney General Henry Stanberry, June 12, 1867. He defines the Reconstruction Acts as the head law enforcement officer of the United States government. Quote, the third section declares that it shall be the duty of each officer, assigned as aforesaid, to protect all persons in their rights of person and property, to suppress insurrection, disorder, and violence, and to punish, or cause to be punished, all disturbers of the public peace and criminals. And to this end he may allow local civil tribunals to take jurisdiction of and try offenders, or, when in his judgment it may be necessary for the trial of offenders, he shall have power to organize military commissions or tribunals for that purpose. And all interference, under color of state authority, capital S, with the exercise of military authority under this act shall be null and void. Unquote. That from the Attorney General's office, June 12, 1867. This again from the Attorney General, Stanberry, June 12, 1867, quote, the fifth section declares the qualification of voters in all elections as well as to frame the new constitution for each state, capital S. As in the elections to be held under the provisional government until the new state constitution, capital S, is ratified by Congress, and also fixes the qualifications of the delegates to frame the new constitution, unquote. Attorney General Stanberry, 1867. Are you listening, America? A new constitution, meaning the old one was done away with in 1867. I have said this many, many times. Was I right about the state governments being done away with and provisional governments put in their place? And state there is a lowercase s. Yes, I was. I have said this affected all states, lowercase s. The government says this condition of conquest was for a short time and did not affect all of the states. Wrong. Why was the emergency declared? Because the southern states refused to ratify the 14th Amendment. Let me ask you this. Is the 14th Amendment regional or is it national? Does it not affect the whole country? Is it not still in force? Ask yourself, what would happen if the states removed the 14th Amendment? The military would again take to the streets. The state governments would again become provisional until the necessary changes were made to appease the conquering government. Read on. This again from the Attorney General's Office, June 12, 1867. Quote, "The sixth section provides that until the people of said rebel states shall be by law admitted to representation in the Congress of the United States, any civil governments which may exist therein shall be deemed provisional only, and in all respects subject to the paramount authority of the United States at any time to abolish, modify, control, or supersede the same, and in all elections to any office under such provisional governments, all persons shall be entitled to vote, and none others who are entitled to vote under the provisions of the fifth section of this act, and no person shall be eligible to any office under any such provisional governments who would not be disqualified from holding office under the provisions of the third article of said constitutional amendment," unquote. Attorney General Stanberry, 1867. Again, this from Stanberry, 1867, quote, "We see clearly enough that this act contemplates two distinct governments. Here we go. In each of these 10 states, the one military, the other civil. The civil government is recognized as existing at the date of the act. The military government is created by the act." Wow. "Both are provisional, and both are to continue until the new state constitution, capital S, is framed, and the state is admitted, capital S, to representation in Congress. When that event takes place, both these provisional governments are to cease. In contemplation of this act, this military authority and this civil authority are to be carried on together. The people in these states are made subject to both, and must obey both in their respective jurisdictions," unquote. Again, next quote from Attorney General Stanberry, 1867, quote, "It had all the characteristics and powers of a state government, capital S, legislative, judicial, and executive, and was in the full and lawful exercise of all these powers, except only that it was not entitled to representation as a state of the Union, capital S," unquote. Back to James Montgomery. "Excuse me, Roger Rabbit, where in the 1787 Constitution was Congress given the authority to deny any state government representation in Congress? Add to this, the southern states were admitted Republican forms of government. Not to mention this military occupation and conquest took place during a time of admitted peace. Come on, America, wake the hell up. Cut your television off. It is late in the day. Start studying. Time is short." These next quotes, again, are from the Attorney General Stanberry's office, June 12, 1867, again, all relating to the Reconstruction Acts. Quote, "Congress was not satisfied with the organic law or constitution under which this civil government was established. That constitution was to be changed in only one particular to make it acceptable to Congress, and that was in the matter of the elective franchise. The purpose, the sole object of this act, is to effect that change, and to effect it by the agency of the people of the state, capital S, or such of them as are made voters by means of elections provided for in the act, and in the meantime to preserve order and to punish offenders if found necessary by military commissions," unquote. Quote, "Whatever power is not given to the military remains with the civil government," unquote. Attorney General Stanberry, 1867. James Montgomery again. "Wow, did you hear that, America? What did they do? Now, instead of our co-equal reservation of rights under the 10th Amendment, we have only what the conquering government allows us to have. In case you have forgotten what the Tenth Amendment is, I'll use a quote from Thomas Jefferson here, and I quote, "I consider the foundation of the Constitution as laid on this ground, that all powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the States, are reserved to the States or to the people." To take a single step beyond the boundaries thus specially drawn around the powers of Congress is to take possession of a boundless field of power no longer susceptible of any definition. Unquote, 1791, Thomas Jefferson. This again from the Attorney General's office, June 12, 1867. Quote, "We see, first of all, that each of these states is made subject to the military authority of the United States, not to the military authority altogether, but with this express limitation, as hereinafter prescribed." Unquote. Again, Attorney General's Office, 1867. Quote, "It appears that some of the military commanders have understood this grant of power as all-comprehensive, conferring on them the power to remove the executive and judicial officers of the state, capital S, and to appoint other officers in their places, to suspend the legislative power of the state, capital S, to take under their control by officers appointed by themselves the collection and disbursement of the revenues of the state, to prohibit the execution of the laws in matters affecting purely civil and private rights, to suspend or enjoin the execution of the judgments and decrees of the established state courts." All of the states here are capital S's, by the way, in this quote. "To interfere in the ordinary administration of justice in the state courts by prescribing new qualifications for jurors, and to change, upon the ground of expedience, the existing relations of the parties to contracts giving protection to one party by violating the rights of another party." Unquote. Attorney General Stanberry, 1867, again, quote, "There can be no doubt as to the rule of construction according to which we must interpret this grant of power. It is a grant of power to military authority over civil rights and citizens in time of peace. It is a new jurisdiction never granted before, by which, in certain particulars and for certain purposes, the established principle that the military shall be subordinate to the civil authority is reversed." Unquote. Again, from Attorney General Stanberry, 1867. The concluding paragraph of this order, number 10, is in these words: "Any law or ordinance heretofore in force in North Carolina or South Carolina, inconsistent with the provisions of this general order, are hereby suspended and declared inoperative, thus announcing not only a power to suspend the laws, but to declare them generally inoperative, and assuming full powers of legislative by the military authority." Unquote. Again, Attorney General Stanberry, 1867, quote, "The ground upon which these extraordinary powers are based is thus set forth in Military Order No. 1, issued in this district. The civil government now existing in North Carolina and South Carolina is provisional only, and in all respects subject to the paramount authority of the United States at any time to abolish, modify, control, or supersede the same. Thus far the provisions of the Act of Congress are well recited. What follows is in these words: local laws and municipal regulations, not inconsistent with the Constitution and laws of the United States, or the proclamations of the President, or with such regulations as are or may be prescribed in the orders of the commanding general, are hereby declared to be in force, and in conformity with, civil officers are hereby authorized to continue the exercise of their proper functions and will be respected and obeyed by the inhabitants." Unquote. This again from Attorney General Stanberry, 1867. Quote, "This construction of his powers under the Act of Congress places the military commander on the same footing as the Congress of the United States. It assumes that the paramount authority of the United States at any time to abolish, modify, control, or supersede is vested in him as fully as it is reserved to Congress. He deems himself a representative of that paramount authority. He puts himself upon an equality with the lawmaking power of the Union. The only paramount authority in our government, so far at least, as the enactment of laws is concerned." Unquote. This again from Attorney General Stanberry, 1867. Quote, "He places himself on higher ground than the President, who is simply an executive officer." Sounds like a dictatorship to me. "He assumes, directly or indirectly, all authority of the state," capital S, these are all capital S states, "legislative, executive, and judicial, and in effect declares, I am the state," unquote. That sounds like a military dictatorship to me. Here, James Montgomery writes, "The following are excerpts from the Senate Report, 93rd Congress, November 19, 1973, Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency United States Senate. They were going to terminate all emergency powers, but they found out they did not have the power to do this. So guess which one stayed in? The Emergency Act of 1933 and the Trading with the Enemy Act, October 6, 1917, as amended on March 9, 1933. Quote, "Since March 9, 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared national emergency. Under the powers delegated by these statutes, the President may seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad, institute martial law, seize and control all transportation and communication, regulate the operation of private enterprise, restrict travel, and in a plethora of particular ways control the lives of all American citizens. A majority of the people of the United States have lived all of their lives under emergency rule. For 40 years, freedoms and governmental procedures guaranteed by the Constitution have, in varying degrees, been abridged by laws brought into force by states of national emergency, from at least the Civil War, in important ways shaped the present phenomenon of a permanent state of national emergency." Unquote. That from the Senate Report, 93rd Congress, November 19th, 1973. James Montgomery finishes this chapter with this sentence. He writes, "I'll let this soak in." All right, this has been the Ministry of Truth. I'm Gordon Comstock. We have been looking at, we're going through the online book, "The United States is Still a British Colony." And this was Chapter 5. Chapter 5 was Common Law versus Conquest. And this is by James Montgomery. And this shatters any delusions you may have had that the Constitution ever meant anything. Also tells you that what privileges the Constitution gave us were in fact all taken away at the Reconstruction, so-called Reconstruction Acts after the so-called Civil War, and elsewhere, other terrible things happened, like in 1933 when the American citizens were were declared enemies of the state, and in 1845, when Congress brought admiralty law onto land, all of these things took away what privileges, not rights, that the fraud called the U.S. Constitution gave us. Wake up, constitutionalists. I used to be one of you. I'm not anymore because I've graduated. I've educated myself from that silly delusion. Stop educating God's law with man's law. The stupid Constitution was man's law. It was always going to be fraudulent, always going to be terribly flawed. You should know that if you're a Christian, Bible-believing Christian. And I will even have to specify now, in this day of biblical so-called proliferation of phony Bibles out there, if you are a Geneva Bible or King James Bible believing person, if you're an NIV reader, NASB reader, I can't help you. I don't know who can. Certainly not the Lord. That's not His word. That's a phony Bible. Anyway, again, I'm Gordon Comstock. This has been the Ministry of Truth, and it's been part 5 of The United States is Still a British Colony by James Montgomery. Over and out.